Well, good morning, brothers and sisters. We spent four sessions yesterday, in fact, looking at the vanities of life and the vanity of death, the brevity of human life, the aging process, how depressing that can be. And even then, when we look into life itself, ironically, the preacher said, well, in some ways, it's actually better to be dead than it is to be alive. So we looked at that too. And just for the benefit of people who weren't here yesterday, I just want to take a couple of minutes just describing some of those things that we looked at. So then we focused in a little bit more detail about what the preacher, the writer of Ecclesiastes, has to say about things within life itself. And we looked at things like wisdom, what he has to say about wisdom. Yes, wisdom is good, but on the other hand, there are limits to wisdom, and there are wise people who are despised or not respected. There are rich people who whose wealth disappears, or they leave it to a son, and their son turns out to be foolish and just squanders their resources. There are, whatever aspect of life that you look at, there are vanities. There are things which are meaningless, which seem to make no sense to us, which we can't understand and rationalise. And this we discovered is yes, a consequence of human sinfulness, but it's also very clearly the teaching of Ecclesiastes, the teaching of the preacher, that God has made life this way quite deliberately. And we'll come back to that theme, God willing, this afternoon. God has given us this sore travail, these frustrating aspects of life. God has given us that travail to exercise us, and so that we might see the limitations of our own existence, see our smallness, our vanity, our lightness, the follies of human existence, and so that we might say, what is the point of that? Is that all there is? Is that the best that life has to offer? And so that we might see all the more powerfully just what God has offered us with his through his purpose in the Lord Jesus Christ. And we saw that around those words of the preacher, from 1 verse 2 through to 12 verse 7 or whatever it is, around those words of the preacher there is a frame in which the editor comes to the fore and says, well, those are the words of the preacher that I've been presenting or regurgitating, rehearsing for you. And here now is the conclusion. Here's the introduction at the beginning, and here's the conclusion at the end. And this is the conclusion that you should draw from those words that the preacher has laid out. This is the message that you should take. This is what you should do about that vain life that humans lead under the sun. A life lived on its own terms is indeed vain. And this is what you should do about it. And the conclusion was, fear God and keep his commandments, for this is everything that a man should be. What we're going to do for the exhortation and for us to do this afternoon is to go back inside the frame, into the words of the preacher, and to see, in fact, that it's not just the conclusion that makes that message. It's not just the editor who says, so go away and fear God, that's how you should live. The preacher himself, within his own message, tells us to live in a positive kind of way. So when we've spent four sessions thinking about the vanities of life, and we might feel a little bit depressed and burdened by that, but the passages that we're going to look at today are quite different, and they tell us, yes, life is indeed like that, but we should take a positive message from it, and we should go away and live our lives fully and enthusiastically towards God. So that's what we're going to be considering. So there's no sense here then of the preacher saying to us, vanity of vanities, all is vanity and vexation of spirit, and there's just no point, you might as well just sit down. Why not just end it now? Life's not worth living. That's not at all the conclusion that he draws. And in fact, there are a number of points in the book where normally he's describing his experiences. He's saying, this is what I saw, and I saw this, and I saw this, looking at different aspects of life. And he gives little case studies where you remember that small city with a few people in it, and the great king comes against it and besieges it. And that's all in the third person. That's all about what other people are doing and what life is like. But there are times when he turns, as it were, towards the camera and says, and as for you, here's a message for you. This is what you should do. And I'd like to take two of those passages to start off with. The first one is in chapter 5, Ecclesiastes 5. So this is perfect material for an exhortation, isn't it? Where the preacher, instead of just commenting about life at a distance, as it were, he now turns and looks right at us and says, you know, the pronoun changes now, and it's thou. This is a message that we should take to heart. Chapter 5 and verse 1. Keep thy foot. There's the thy. Keep thy foot when thou goest to the house of God. And be more ready to hear than to give the sacrifice of fools. For they consider not that they do evil. Be not rash with thy mouth. So we've had the foot, we've had the hearing, now we've got the mouth. Be not rash with thy mouth, and let not thy heart be hasty. So we have to think about our whole being then, and all the aspects of us, and how they're engaged with respect to God, and whether they're engaged appropriately. Let not thine heart be hasty to utter anything before God. For God is in heaven, and thou upon earth. Therefore, let thy words be few. And that's a great exhortation to anyone giving an exhortation, isn't it? And to anyone giving a prayer, or to anyone saying anything, in fact, at an ecclesial meeting, or at any other occasion. Just think about that huge gulf between God and man. Just think about how we were considering yesterday that if a man labour to get wisdom and to understand the things that are done under heaven, to understand what life is about and how life works, though a man labour to seek it and strive to seek it, and even though he thinks he knows it, he's only fooling himself because he doesn't really, because you can't get there, you can't get to the bottom of it, because that's God's business, and God knows what he's doing, and he does the right thing, and we can't fathom the extent of his works. Now if that is true, if we believe that, then we will have rather less to say for ourselves, won't we? We'll be rather slower to speak and quick to listen to God's voice. So, you know, people say, don't they, well, I like to think that, blah, 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 blah. Well, good for you. You know, you enjoy thinking that if you want, but let's not mistake the one thing for the other. Let's not mistake what I think with what God says. Very important distinction. And I expect we've all got pet theories about different things. We were invited to go for dinner over Easter at some people that Anita knows, and not people in the truth. And we went for dinner, and afterwards the guy took me down into his basement, and in his basement he'd got set up this incredible display of tools and equipment. And what he was trying to do, he was trying to create a little cocoon whereby he could provide for himself and for his children anything that he would need in case the economy deteriorated to such a degree and that society wasn't able to do things for itself anymore, and we all had to rely on our personal expertise to do things. And so he got all these tools so that he was ready, you know, for some kind of Holocaust situation or something. And that was his theory, that was what the world was coming to, and that there would be all these people with professional jobs who knew how to type on keyboards but had no idea how to do anything practically useful, and so that was why he was teaching his children how to do woodwork and how to make fences and all this stuff. Well, that's just one example that just struck me of. So why do you think that? Why do you think that's what the world is coming to? It may very well be a reasonable thing to think, but it was just his view. And he built this incredible basement with all this stuff in it on the basis of that opinion that he'd had. And it was just his opinion. There are people who we say they like to hear the sound of their own voice, aren't they? And this passage is the antidote to that, really, when we think about the gulf between ourselves and God and what he knows in comparison to what we don't know. And so this sort of somber approach that the vanities of life has brought us, thinking about the vanities of life has brought us to, then has its implications for when we speak to God, and how careful we should be when we think we know. Let's carry on, for verse 3, for a dream cometh through the multitude of busyness, and the fool's voice is known by the multitude of words. That's what a fool's voice is known by, the multitude of words. When thou vowest a vow unto God, defer not to pay it, for he hath no pleasure in fools. Pay that which thou hast vowed. Verse 6. Suffer not thy mouth, is the other body part now. Suffer not thy mouth to cause thy flesh to sin. Neither say thou before the angel that it was an error. Wherefore should God be angry at thy voice and destroy the work of thy hands? For in the multitude of dreams and many words there are also divers vanities. But hear thou God. So we can get sort of carried away by not just our own theories and views, but by other theories that are out there, other ideas, and there's all sorts of interesting ideas there that we can be involved in. But let's remember what really counts. What really counts is what God has to say, and it's to him that our ears should be attuned above all other. It's a very clear message then, and an important exhortation from that passage. And there are other places in Ecclesiastes too, moving on from that, where he turns to us again and says, here's a point that you need to take to heart. And so we're not going to look at these, but let me just give you a flavour of them. You can go through the book and you can pick out all these passages where he turns and addresses you and me personally. Don't be hasty to be angry. Don't ask, why was the past better than the present is? Don't always be living in the past. You've got to get on and live life as it is today. Give yourself to wisdom. Don't worry what other people say about you. Keep the word of the king or people in authority, and behave in their presence. Be wise. Yield to rulers, don't argue with them, don't curse the king or the rich. Those are the examples. But the other passage I'd like us to look at is in chapter 11. Cast thy bread upon the waters, for thou shalt find it after many days. So we're drawing now to the conclusion of the book. We're in the second to the last chapter, and the preacher himself is going to stop talking at 12 verse 7. So we're drawing close to that and to the concluding poem about death and aging. And his final exhortation then, before he comes to that death and aging theme, is this, that we should cast our bread upon the waters, for thou shalt find it after many days. So that is an exhortation then about involvement, about commitment, about giving things a go, isn't it? About not sitting back and saying, well, there's just so much vanity out there that I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to sit back and wait and see what happens. And whatever it is, well, that will be a vanity too. Not so. He's encouraging us here to be proactive, to take opportunities, because we don't know what the impact of those will be. We don't know what God has in store for us. That's not an excuse to do nothing. That's an excuse, or that's a reason, to get involved, because we don't know how God will choose to take up the efforts and the initiative that we show to use them in His service. Give a portion to seven and also to eight, for thou knowest not what evil shall be upon the earth. So an encouragement to generosity there. Then he talks about the clouds and the trees, how there are consequences from things that happen. And similarly then, if we show initiative and if we get involved, if we approach life proactively, striving to serve God, then there will be consequences from that too, and God will work with us. Verse 4, he that observeth the wind shall not sow. If we just sit back listening to the weather forecast and worrying about whether it's going to be appropriate or not on a given day, then we won't do very much. We'll just sit around wondering. We need to seize the day and the opportunity. And verse 5 is one that we looked at already, isn't it? As thou knowest not what is the way of the Spirit, nor how the bones do grow in the womb of her that is with child, even so thou knowest not the works of God who maketh all. And so the concluding exhortation is this: in the morning sow thy seed, and in the evening withhold not thine hand. For thou knowest not whether shall prosper either this or that, or whether they shall both alike be good. So you don't know what the outcome is going to be, but that's no reason for not getting involved in the first place. A very clear message then to press forward with life and the opportunities that it presents. The vanities that are in the world should not put us off from approaching life in a positive way. We must get on with the business of living. I'd like now to go through a series of passages which emphasise this theme. They're very special passages in Ecclesiastes, and it's amazing, given that these passages exist, it's amazing that some people have read the book and come to the conclusion that the preacher is a pessimist. Not at all, as we shall see. He says, this is how things are, and this is what you should do about it. Let's see what it is that we should do. Chapter 2 and verse 24. We're just going to work through from the beginning of the book through to the end, just picking out this series of passages, and we'll see that, in fact, they're thematically very similar, and they form a kind of chain through the book, which is very important. Chapter 2 and verse 24. If you just look above verse 24 for a second, you'll see the kind of thing that we were examining yesterday. You'll see, the days of a man are sorrows, his travail, grief, his heart doesn't take rest in the night, this is vanity. So those can be real aspects of the human experience. Nevertheless, what approach should we take? Well, he tells us now in verse 24, there is nothing better for a man than that he should eat and drink, and that he should make his soul enjoy good in his labour. This also I saw, that it was from the hand of God. Now, there's a few important things going on there then. So he's not saying about you should look for profit. He's not saying that you should look for profit from your labour, something that persists beyond your labour, but your labour is what it is. And to the extent that it's possible to do so, you should enjoy it. And, you know, enjoy the life that we are living. We should appreciate our lives. We should eat and drink and make our soul enjoy good in our labour. This is from the hand of God. So just as those vanities are from the hands of God, so the satisfaction that we can gain from life, from, and who doesn't get satisfaction from eating a good meal, particularly if we've been labouring beforehand, it's one of the great pleasures of life, isn't it? It's a tremendous gift from God that we can do that. And so just as the vanities come from God, in a sense, so too these things are from God, and we should enjoy them. And we should thank him for them, as of course we do when we give thanks for our food, in that particular example. And in verse 26 he says, "For God giveth to a man that is good in his sight wisdom and knowledge and joy, but to the sinner he giveth travail to gather and to heap up, that he may give to him that is good before God. This also is vanity and vexation of spirit." So those things of enjoyment in life, they are what they are. What we mustn't do is confuse them for something more than they are. They shouldn't be the goal in life, but nevertheless they are good gifts from God, and we should appreciate them and we should enjoy them. That's just one passage. Let's take the next one, chapter 3 and verse 12. In chapter 4, I thought it disappeared. Chapter 3 and verse 12. "I know that there is no good in them, but for a man to rejoice and to do good in his life, and also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labour. It is the gift of God." So you can recognise those sentiments. They're pretty similar, aren't they, to the ones we just considered. So this is now the second passage that is making that point. Now, some people have said, well, actually, this is that you should take these passages satirically. It's a kind of irony. He's just saying how vain everything is. And then he's saying, yeah, so go on, enjoy life if you can. If you're too dumb to notice how vain life is, then you go ahead and enjoy it. So some people have read these passages in that way. But I really don't think that's right. And I think... for me that comes because, although yes, you can certainly see him being ironic in certain passages, and we saw some of that yesterday, it seems to me that this message is too insistent, too dominant in the book to take that way. It chimes with the editorial conclusion of the book, and also if you do a study of everything that the book says about God, the whole thing fits together so well that you create more of a problem if you read these passages satirically than if you take them seriously, I think. So when he says this is the gift of God, I think he genuinely means that we should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all our labour. It is the gift of God. And I think we're going to find a New Testament passage in a second that will chime with that. Let's move on to our next passage, verse 22 of chapter 3. "Wherefore I perceive that there is nothing better than that a man should rejoice in his own works, for that is his portion," that's his allotment. God has given us that, just like God has given us our life and said, "Here is your life," and we don't know how long or how short that will be, but God has given us that to us as a gift, so God has given us our ability to enjoy these things. And we should thank him for it. We should not get carried away into thinking that is more than it is, that that's all that life is about. Of course not. All this teaching about vanity has shown us that there is a lot of emptiness in life. But we should appreciate the good things in life as things which are gifts, a gift of God. This is our portion from God. Let's go on to the next passage, chapter 5. So we've had three of these passages now, and on we go into chapter 5, and verses 18 and 19. "Behold that which I have seen, it is good and comely for one to eat and to drink, and to enjoy the good of all his labour that he taketh under the sun all the days of his life which God giveth him, for it is his portion." And that same idea of your portion or your allotment from God, it's there again in this passage, isn't it? Every man also to whom God hath given riches and wealth, and hath given him power to eat thereof, and to take his portion, and to rejoice in his labour, this is the gift of God. So God may or may not give you that gift, but if he has, that's what it is. It is a gift. And he might have given you the riches and not given you the power to eat them, because some people have had that situation, and he describes that elsewhere in the book. So if you have the power to eat them, in quotation marks, then that is a gift. That is kind that God has done that, and we should appreciate it. And we should make sure that we're not deceived by those riches into thinking they're more than they are. So, you know, this comes back to, I had no idea, incidentally, when I made my comments about golf yesterday, I had no idea that there was a Brethren's golfing weekend coming up. But, you know, there's a flip side to what we were saying about golf. I mean, I was talking about golf and superior golf clubs as being, you know, potentially an object of desire and obsession for a certain kind of male. And that just taking that as an example of things that we can place more value on than that we ought to, but that doesn't mean that it's not a wonderful thing to enjoy a game of golf, and that we can thank God that we can do that. And then, of course, it's about balancing, isn't it, and keeping things in proportion, and making sure that we're putting first what is really first in our lives, that it's God and not golf, in that rather silly example, but, you know, that stands for a whole lot of other things. That, and I expect that many of us have things in our lives that are like that. I mean, for me, it's music, and I just get an incredible enjoyment and pleasure from music. God needn't have given me that. It might have been that God had made men and women not musical or not able to appreciate music. And what a wonderful blessing it is that God has given us that ability, that appreciation. Tremendous thing, isn't it? Imagine a world without music. And that's another one of God's gifts. Isn't he a wonderful God to have done that? So he's given us all this vanity to make us realise our limitations and to make us seek after him. And he's also given us these wonderful gifts to appreciate. Let's not be led astray by them. Let's not let them dominate our lives. But let's appreciate them from God. So our approach to life then, given what we know about God's purpose and about where life is heading, our approach to life should be one of joy and gladness, shouldn't it? We should be living lives in that way, pleased to be his, and pleased that he has given us such a wonderful life in so many ways, and in particular such a wonderful hope and knowledge of his purpose. Let's go to the next passage in chapter 8, and this is now the fifth one of these passages. Chapter 8 and verse 15. Then I commended mirth, because a man hath no better thing under the sun than to eat and to drink and to be merry, for that shall abide with him of his labour the days of his life, which God giveth him under the sun. So, in terms of life on its own terms, those times when we enjoy ourselves, those are the things that we'll remember. We'll remember the good times of life, he's saying, and we do remember them, don't we? We do have happy memories from life, and God has given us those things. And on into chapter 9 and verse 7. Go thy way, eat thy bread with joy. And you see now that we've got an imperative here, and I neglected to mention it as we were going through those five passages, and now we're at the sixth. But there's a kind of crescendo building up as we go through. In fact, there are seven of these passages altogether. That's interesting, isn't it? There are seven of these altogether. These go thy way, enjoy life. This is the good gift that God has given you. There are seven of these passages, and each one becomes a little bit more emphatic. So, sorry, in the second one he says, I know that. And in the third one he says, wherefore I perceive that. And then the third one, behold that which I have seen. And it's a little bit stronger than the perception of the previous one. And then in chapter 8 he said, so I praise joy. It's good to be joyful. It's worthwhile to live in a joyful way. After all, if we can't be joyful, then who can be? With what God has given us. And here now in the sixth example of these passages, we have this imperative. Chapter 9 and verse 7. Let's just look at it again. Go thy way, eat thy bread with joy, and drink thy wine with a merry heart. For God now accepteth thy works. Let thy garments be always white, and let thy head lack no ointment. Live joyfully with the wife whom thou lovest all the days of the life of thy vanity, which he hath given thee under the sun, all the days of thy vanity. For this is thy portion in this life, and in thy labour, which thou takest under the sun. So there's something double-edged about that. At one stage he's saying, yes, enjoy that life, but remember what it is. It's the life of your vanity. Those things are a vanity, but they're a good vanity. They're an enjoyable vanity. And we should thank God for them. I'd like to... there's one more passage, so keep your finger in Ecclesiastes. But just think for a moment about the teaching of the New Testament, where Jesus says that God gives to all... This is the words of Paul in Acts 17, where Paul says that God gives to all life and breath and all things. Those things and that life that we have, God gives them. That's exactly what Ecclesiastes is telling us. But what did Jesus say? Jesus said, he maketh his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and sendeth rain on the just and the unjust. God has made his sun to rise on the evil and the good. And what is Ecclesiastes about? It's about life under that very sun that God has raised to shine upon us. And so whether we're good or evil, whether we're just or unjust, we're living lives under the sun. We're living our lives here now in these days of our vanity. And what attitude then is it appropriate to have before God? Yes, a circumspect one, because of the emptiness of human life. But also one which renders to God the praise which is his due for the many wonderful things of life. And the one I'd like us to turn to is 1 Timothy 6. So we've got this reference and then one back in Ecclesiastes to finish. 1 Timothy 6. And this just chimes, I think, beautifully with what Ecclesiastes has to tell us. 1 Timothy 6 and verse 17. Charge them that are rich in this world that they be not high-minded, nor trust in uncertain riches. So it's one thing to enjoy having blessings from God. It's another thing to trust in them. And Ecclesiastes has made very plain how foolish it would be to trust in them or to make them the goal of our lives. We should not trust in uncertain riches then. We should trust in the living God, who giveth us richly all things to enjoy. Do you see how that's exactly the same message of these seven passages of Ecclesiastes? He giveth us not stingily, he giveth us richly all things to enjoy. So let's live to him then, and let's give him that praise and glory and thanks for the wonderful gifts of life. That they do good, verse 18, that they be rich in good works. So now he's bringing, but yeah, that's fine, take that exhortation about enjoying life, but then we need to remember something else as well. We need to remember our responsibilities to God. And so we need to do good and be rich in good works. So don't trust in uncertain riches, but be rich in good works. So it's one thing to give thanks for riches, and we're all rich, aren't we? In world standards, in terms of most of the population of the world, we're all rich. Don't trust in those riches, be thankful for them, and make sure that what we're really rich in and what matters to us is that we're rich in good works, ready to distribute, sharing what we have, having fellowship, willing to communicate, laying up in store for themselves a good foundation against the time to come, that they may lay hold on eternal life. Not the vanity of life, of this life which is so fleeting, but on the eternal life that God promises. Let's finish in Ecclesiastes 11 and 12. This is the final one then, the climactic passage of this sequence of seven passages about making sure that we're positive and truly thankful and appreciative to our Heavenly Father for all the blessings that He bestows upon us. Chapter 11 and verse 9. Rejoice, O young man, in thy youth. And it's an imperative again here, isn't it? This is what we should do with whatever youth we have left, whatever capacities we have within us, that we should rejoice and let our heart cheer us in the days of our youth and walk in the ways of our heart and in the sight of our eyes. But we should know that there is a context for our enjoyment. And that context is that for all these things, God will bring thee into judgment. So enjoy them, but remember that we have a responsibility towards God. Therefore, remove sorrow from thy heart. Don't be depressed about the message of the preacher. Remove sorrow from thy heart. Put away evil from thy flesh, for childhood and youth are vanity. In 12, verse 1, and this is embedded, isn't it? Right in the middle of that passage, which could have been such a depressing passage about aging and decay. This is what's tucked away in the middle. Remember now the Creator in the days of thy youth. So that's the exhortation. It's a very clear message. Yes, there are vanities in life, but God has balanced those vanities with wonderful gifts for us, which we should appreciate, for which we should render glory and honour to His name. And we should make sure that our involvement and our enjoyment and appreciation of those gifts is set in the context that the editor of the book provides for us when he says, "Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is man's all."